Bernard Leiter was born in Belgium in 1942. He is an international expert in the design and implementation of currency systems. He has studied and worked in the field of money for more than 55 years in a broad range of capacities. As a central banker, fund manager, university professor, and consultant to numerous governments, multinational corporations, and community organizations. Bernard Leiter co-designed and implemented the convergence mechanism to the single European currency system and served as president of the electric payment system. He co-funded and managed GaiaCorp, one of the largest and most successful currency management firms in the world. In this capacity, he was named by Business Week in the early 1990s the world's best currency trader. Lars Schall has met Mr. Leiter recently in Germany in order to talk with him about the great mystery in everybody's life, money.
Mr. Leiter, there is a saying, Exscientia pecunia libertas, which means from the knowledge of money comes liberty or freedom. Is this true?
Yes, I think it could be. It certainly isn't today. However, I think we should understand that we need to understand what money more than the current system. If you just learn about the current system, you're remaining within a loop where I don't believe there's freedom at the end. Yeah. We're stuck there. We have been stuck there for quite a while.
Why is it important to think about money? I mean, most of the time we take it for granted.
Yes, I guess that's part of the problem. What you don't bring up to consciousness, you live with as fate. You're condemned to live it. And that's what happens with money. We are considering a given. And in fact, it is manipulating us in directions that the majority of the people wouldn't want if they understood what's going on.
So can you tell us a little bit about the origins and the nature of money? It seems that money has something to do with a kind of agreement and maybe therefore with perception.
Well, let me first point out what money is not. All economic textbooks define money in terms of its functions. Minimum of exchange, standard of value, store of value. That doesn't tell you what money is. It tells you only what money does. But by defining it in terms of its functions, you believe that's a given. Okay? If someone had defined transport as horses, that there was no word for transport, nobody would ever invented a car or a bicycle, right? You would have perfected horses forever. And that's what we're doing. My definition, my working definition for money is that it's an agreement within a specific community to use something standardized as a medium of exchange. That's my definition. And that covers a much broader spectrum than what conventional money usually assumes.
But if now the majority of people has no knowledge whatsoever about money, who has agreed upon this?
Which a few centuries ago. We've gotten used to it. We take it for granted. In fact, the kind of money at the really general, most general level, that we're currently considering normal is the idea of a single currency.
You see the connection between the money system and the development of patriarchal societies. Why is there this connection?
If you put in one box all patriarchal societies in history, Sumer, Babylon, most of the history of China, the Romans, the Greeks, and since the Renaissance in Western Europe, today us, all these societies take a single currency as a given, and with positive interest rates, i.e. it's a concentration device. It actually makes sense in a patriarchal worldview that you need to bring the resources to the top. Yeah. And that's what it does. Now, if you put in another box, matrifocal societies, societies that honor feminine values, There, what's interesting is that you have two types of currencies. You have one currency identical to the patriarchal one, but that's to trade with people you don't know, far distance, long distance trading. You have a second currency, a second type of currency, whose rules are exactly the opposite of the patriarchal one, which is then used for the local exchanges. And the rules that are different are that in the patriarchal system, the money is issued from the top. There is an interest focusing resources to the top as well. In a matrifocal currency, you have a currency where you actually don't have interest, and the most sophisticated have a negative interest rate. So they only used for medium of exchange, not as a store of value. And you do have people use emitting the currency themselves. It's bottom up. So it's exactly the opposite of the other one. But by having these two currencies in parallel, it creates a completely different society.
Would you say the way money works is rather insane? For example, that you have money as debt. You have something that should be a positive, but it's actually something right from the beginning, a negative, right?
Well, yes, every euro, every dollar, every yen is someone's debt. Someone's was created typically through a debt, either from government, for a corporation, or for an individual. So yes, I would say calling it crazy, I don't think that defines it. I think it is so extraordinarily limiting. That's where the danger is. I have actually no problems with the existence of this current system. I do have an enormous problem with its monopoly. That's where the issue is. For me, there are limits in every currency, whatever design you have, every type of idea as a medium of exchange will have its limits. But the having a monopoly of this kind of currency, that is not only, I wouldn't call it crazy, but dangerous actually, because of the limits that it puts on what we can do.
Is the magic of compound interest a problem that you see as such?
It is one of the features of the existing system. Again, if you use it for making a competitive society, a competitive game, it has its justification within limits. But if you impose it as a single currency, there it actually doesn't make any sense, because we are having, with exponential growth, by definition, will blow up the lid in a finite world. Okay, and that's what we're living repeatedly. The system cannot survive the long term, because by definition it accumulates forever faster and faster.
Is fractional reserve banking a problem?
I repeat myself, it's not a problem per se in my viewpoint, at the condition it's not the single currency. It's not the only currency allowed. Fractional reserve has proven possible, actually has given, in my view, the fuel necessary for the industrial age. The industrial age would not have occurred if we didn't have this kind of money system. However, we're now beyond the industrial age, and we're still using that same system. And now it is dangerously limiting us.
What does our money system promote or enhance?
Competition, short-term thinking, the reduction of social capital, the possibility of more. Our current system has been created under the duress of war, and every one of the improvements, quote-unquote, have been done typically within an environment of a war, and it has also been at the source of many wars. War provides an environment where you can wipe the slate clean. When things are impossible, and we're putting ourselves in that situation now, Historically, we've resolved it every time with war. I believe it's time to look for other tools, for other ways of resolving the issues that we're dealing with, structural issues. That's what I'm advocating.
Yeah. Is our monetary structure a systemic cause for the financial instability?
Sure. The combination of the different features. First of all, the fact that it is a monoculture. We know from network theory, complex flow networks, that any complex flow network, in order to be stable, needs to have diversity in its media that actually is being used in the process. If you have a monoculture, by definition, it will be unstable. And that's what we do with our current money. What I mean by that is, like, you, all the quote-unquote national currencies today, all the conventional currencies, are the same way, created the same way, through bank debt. The yen or the dollar or the euro are not better or worse than the others. They're all the same type of currency created in the same way, generating the same kind of behavior patterns. And in addition, given that the institutions, the major institutions that are involved in the process, the banks, the biggest banks are global, they're doing the same thing everywhere at the same time. So that is a further reason for instability.
Yeah. Once there was our money was backed by gold, is it a problem that it isn't anymore backed by gold?
To me, you can project the money system on just about anything, okay, as an agreement. If you agree that gold is quote-unquote real money and only gold, which some people believe, okay? I mean, some people have assumed that. And therefore, then it is true that gold is the medium of exchange. It's still a monoculture. It's still a single currency. I'm not against the use of gold as a medium of exchange, as long as it's, again, one part of it, not the whole thing, not the whole range. We need different tools for different purposes. And the gold standard had its advantages and its limitations. It basically put positions in the government that they couldn't do affect anything in the economy. They were just sitting there waiting for things to happen.
How did the abandoning of the gold standard change the way central banks work?
From a central bank viewpoint, if you look at their fundamental role, it hasn't changed anything. In fact, what I find ironic is that there is two stories about governments that are more affected by this, in fact, than central banks. Typically, the story we hear is that governments are like a family. You need to earn the money to expenses to cover your expenses. And if you don't, then you need to borrow the money from people who have it. That's the storyline that we do for a family. In fact, that was true in the gold standard days. Nobody could create gold. And if you didn't need, if you didn't have the capacity to raise them as income in terms of taxes, then you needed to borrow it. Now, we've been using the same concept, however, in fiat world. We're currently in a fiat currency world. Fiat comes from the Latin and means the first word that God said in the Bible in Genesis, let light be, and light was, and he saw it was good. So, in other words, it's the capacity to create something out of nothing. That is what fiat money is. And that's what currently happens all over the world. All national currencies are created out of thin air by the banking system in the moment of making loans. Now, in that environment, the story of the family, the government being similar to a family, isn't true. Basically, governments can decide what they accept in terms of payment of taxes. And it could be different things, or it could be just one thing. And whatever that is that they decide to accept or require in payments of taxes, that is what everybody will accept in terms of payment of currencies. Now, it will be their money.
Are central banks necessary? Or is it the case that the fact that there are so many central banks, I think there are only 3 countries in the world without a central bank, is this an expression of this monoculture?
The purpose of the central banks is to maintain the paradigm of a single currency in favor of the banks. Their real role is to protect the interests of the banking system. Some major central banks, like the Federal Reserve, are actually private companies owned by central banks. The same thing is true for 5 other countries, even today. So it is part of the smokescreen that central banks are actually a public institution doing things for the public good. Their fundamental purpose is to protect the monopoly of the currency in favor of the banking system and having one single currency. That is, they're basically in charge of the orthodoxy of, you know, the correct process of thinking. And they're positioned as being a public institution for the public good, while in fact that's their real role. Now, you need a central bank in the modern money system. If you're going to have fractional reserve money systems with banks, you better have a central bank because it will be unstable. And therefore, you have a fire department needed to take care of those issues with that kind of currency, yes. But you don't need it for every single other currency that you would design. It's only for certain types of currencies that are inherently unstable that you need that.
What are your thoughts related to the fact that gold reemerges in the monetary system?
Well, I don't think we'll go back to the gold standard, if what you're thinking. I have no problems personally with gold being one other currency being used in parallel. Okay. In fact, the gold standard days was a lie. Even when in its heydays, in the good period, quote unquote, the cover of the real cover of paper money was only a fraction of the gold that was there. The Bank of England considered it a state secret how much gold they had. There's a very funny episode in one of the governors of the Central Bank of Britain, the Bank of England, being interviewed at the in the Parliament in London, and they were asking, would you please say, as the governor, how much gold there is in the Bank of England? He said, in ample sufficiency, sir. Would you be more precise? No, sir. Okay.
Do you think there is a competition going on between the money that, for example, the Federal Reserve and the Treasury of the U.S. Issues, the dollar, and gold?
Well, what happens if you have a gold increase, price increase, it is interpreted as being a sign of the weakness of the dollar. So in that sense, you know, as gold gets more cover or more importance, the U.S. feels threatened that it actually would undermine the credibility of the dollar. So in that sense, there is not really generally competition because nobody walks around with lots of gold to buy things. That's not the way it works anymore for quite a while now. I would say 2 centuries minimum. So there is actually that competition, if you want, but I wouldn't call it competition. It's more concern of a signal that people would interpret as undermining the dollar. The dollar will get in trouble, not because of gold, but because of other reasons, because basically people not trusting the dollar anymore.
Would you say there are then some incentives for central banks to cap the price?
I would say particularly for the U.S. dollar. For the U.S., yes, there is, and there has been signs of some manipulation, yes.
Will the U.S. dollar fail?
It's only a question of when. not weather, unfortunately, because it's going to be a very big mess. Because we have absolutely no plan B. There is no alternative that has been set up. There's actually no alternative that has been allowed to be set up. And therefore, it's going to be a hard landing when that happens.
Mm-hmm. Was the euro a good idea?
I think that if the euro did not exist, the European Union would have fallen apart back in the late 90s. So the euro is a good idea. However, the governance of the euro is another question. Okay, when I was actually involved in the phase of the ECU, the European Currency Unit, which was the convergence system to the euro, which actually was successful, we were told then the whole governance part. Don't worry, it's not part of your need to deal with. We'll do that later. They didn't do anything for 35 years. So trying to deal with it in the middle of a crisis is not going to be fun.
Do you give the euro much future?
In its current form and in its current way of being managed, there is a very low chance that it will survive as it is. I think it will. There will be something left of it. Okay, I think it will evolve. But it won't be in the current structure as it is today.
Is the European Monetary Union something democratic?
There has never been a monetary democracy, really. And I would say part of it, you know, is not necessary, but there is a part that it needs to be. And that's where we're hungering for right now. You need other kinds of currencies which actually can reflect the democratic input and that are currently not given a chance.
What are complementary currencies? Can you explain the concept behind them?
To be a complementary currency is any standardized medium of exchange that people choose to use that is not the national money. There are commercial applications that everybody knows, things like miles, which are pretty old now, 35 years. There are systems that are small scale, many of them, most of them are small scale, but they don't have to be. So it's basically anything that is not quote-unquote legal tender and that people use as a standardized medium of exchange. Now, my solution to the current monetary instability is what I call a monetary ecosystem. In other words, a diversity of currencies of different scales for different functions. And not everybody will use every one of them. Doesn't make any sense. You choose the ones that are relevant for you, and it will be different for a business person, for a mother of a family, and all that stuff. They may have each their own types of media of exchange other than national money that makes sense for what they were trying to do.
Yeah. You're interested in a global currency called Terra. What is this?
The Terra is a currency, a global currency, that's nobody's national currency. It would provide a media of exchange that is actually unattached to any nation state, but that would be more stable than any of the national currencies. I would have it fully backed by a basket of commodities, which are the most important commodities for global trade. Things like copper, oil, obviously, whatever the major elements of global trade in terms of commodities are. So by having a fully backed currency, you would have a currency capable of resisting any shock, including a dollar crisis, for example, or a euro crisis. In addition, my main reason for proposing it is that it's a currency that is designed to make it profitable to think long term, which I believe is going to be essential if you want to give humanity a chance. The people, the organizations that decide our future are the major businesses in the world. And that is what is, whether you like it or not, that's a fact. And I have actually no problems with that per se, except if the corporations are optimizing return only for the next 2 quarters or 3 quarters. Then we are going to walk straight into a wall. So the Terra would actually make it profitable to think long term. And the reason is that it has a negative interest rate. The storage costs of the basket of commodities is actually paid by the bearer of the currency.
Now, one last question. In 1990, Georg Simmel published his book, The Philosophy of Money. And in it, he stated that basically money is today's God. What is your opinion about this? Is he right on the money on this?
I'm afraid he's right. I'm afraid he's right. It is a God of shadows. It is a God that drives the negative aspects of humanity too. Greed, short-term thinking, competition. Again, I have no problems that some of it is there, but I have a problem with the only tool that we have to make changes among ourselves is actually pushing all of us in the same direction, which is not going to make possible sustainability.
Money and the equation of power is, it's pretty much the same, right?
Well, money probably is the main tool for power. Money is a capacity to make people do things for you in specific ways, people or organizations. So by controlling money, you can actually control almost everybody. You certainly control governments, and the governments in turn control everybody. So that has been what's going on.
Monsieur Leterre, merci beaucoup.
Je vous en prie.